This podcast was brought to you by our Supreme Boilers of Leather, the Elton Dane, the Sword of the Morning, and Morgan. If you want to find out how to become a Supreme Boiler of Leather, or how to get access to the Patreon bonus content, head over to patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour.
Boiled Leather Audio Hour. Yes, that's right. It's the Boiled Leather Audio Hour, not the Boiled Leather Audio Moment, the Patreon-exclusive series of podcasts where we've heretofore been covering Tony Gilroy's incredible Star Wars show, Andor. We're bringing it over to the main feed, baby, because we feel like people are very, very excited about the show and excited to talk about it. And frankly, we're out of shows to talk about because there's no more House of the Dragon. So here we are. Anyway, my name is Sean T. Collins. Did I say that already? I'm not sure. And I am a television critic for such publications as The New York Times, Rolling Stone, Vulture, and Decider. The last of these is where I cover Andor. And joining me, as always, is my illustrious co-host.
And professional, Stefan Sass. And I'm so professional that I also don't know if you started it by mentioning your name. But now that's us. That's us. And yeah, we decided to bring Andor into the main feed. And I think mostly because we just assume everyone's watching it anyways. If you have so far not listened to all our other reviews, of course, they are not mandatory listening, mind you. But for the paltry sum of $5, you can get access to not only our other Andor reviews, but also the whole back catalog of the Boiled Leather Audio Moment. It's practically for free, more or less. So, really, for the full compliment, join the Boiled Leather Audio Moment. But now, the last two episodes will be free for everyone because it's a rebellion. We are rebelling against capitalism and our own money base, which is surely a very clever move. I'm feeling like Saul Guerrero already. So what did you make of this episode?
Well, anyway, this is episode 11 that we're talking about, first of all. You're joining us already in progress. We've covered the first 10 episodes on the Patreon. Honestly, patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour, $5 a month will get you access to all of our previous 10 Andor reviews, plus dozens and dozens of other Patreon-exclusive podcasts and mini-podcasts and tons of writing by Stefan. I really recommend it. Anyway, yes, this is episode 11, Daughter of Ferrix, and it's kind of a quiet, quiet, somber episode. That's more about kind of the emotional aftermath of that incredibly rousing and cathartic prison break that took place in episode 10, which I think really, as much as this series has been acclaimed so far, that prison break, I think, is really what made people stop in their tracks and be like, something special's going on here. Across the board, the reviews and the responses I saw to that episode were just flipping out over the moon, and rightly so. It was like I've said in my review, and like I said in our episode about that episode, it's the first time in the 40-year history of Star Wars, or 45-year history of Star Wars, 40 years for me, that I've ever been brought to tears by anything Star Wars related, which I think is a real achievement, and I'm saying that as a huge fan. Anyway. So this episode is much more subdued, and I think a lot of it is driven by feelings of frustration and feelings of powerlessness and feelings of grief, because one of the main plot points, and it's depicted in a way that I think is really gutsy, is that Andor finds out his mother has died. And she dies off screen. She's given no death scene. And this is Fiona Shaw, like a real deal actor that they could have done this with. And I think to their credit, they felt like, you know, it's actually a little more interesting if you don't get to see that, because then you feel bereaved in the audience. You get denied a presence at the deathbed, just like Andor himself gets denied a presence at the deathbed. I think that decision is enormously gutsy, and I think it kind of establishes the tone for the whole thing, which is not to say, before I pass it over to you, Stefan, that this episode is not also simultaneously the most Star Warsy episode of this show so far. Between the cool troll-like aliens that Andor encounters after the prison break, and the incredibly funny and awesome escape that Luthen Rail makes from the Imperial Patrol that nearly catches him at the end of the episode, it has like the most rousing original trilogy kind of feelings that you have gotten from this show so far, which has not, generally speaking, been a show that's been all that interested in trafficking in that kind of stuff. Here you really get it. And I feel like it comes through at exactly the right moment when so much of the episode, like I said, is so concentrated on feelings of frustration and powerlessness and sadness and grief. To have these moments of this sort of, you know, traditional Star Warsy joy come through, man, just so intelligently scripted by showrunner Tony Gilroy, directed by director Benjamin Caron. Remarkable work, I thought. What did you think?
I just wanted to say the same thing about the ending especially. I mean, at this point, I do not really need to reiterate just how great a show this is, and it is just way beyond everything anyone could have ever assumed about this. Basically, it's just that good. But yeah, as you said, we get a feeling of frustration throughout this episode, because our main characters are feeling that frustration. Everyone is kind of on the edge, you know, and pushed to the limits, and no one is, even the bad guys are not happy at all. And the ending of this episode with the escape of Luthen is just such a cathartic moment to give us this action scene, this very Star Warsy action scene right there, this moment of joy, this... I can so understand Luthen, is my point, you know, with this being fed up, and now he finally can let his flag fly and show what his cool spaceship has up its sleeve, and kill 4 TIE fighters, disable this huge Imperial Corvette thingy, and then zip away into hyperspace none the wiser. This is just great stuff, and it's a guilty pleasure for Luthen, and it's a guilty pleasure for us. And this thematic mirroring, basically, is what makes this so great. They're not using the action to for pacing reasons, basically. So, and now we had so many talking scenes, we need an action scene now. But it is there because it makes sense for the characters. This is a character development moment, and not just an action scene, however well crafted. And yeah, kudos to that. And this is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to great acting, great writing, great production all around, as we are now accustomed to with Andor. We're getting spoiled. There is no bad episode. Even the first 3, Mr. Steppenwolf, are good. So... yeah, if you listen to our last review, which once again is available to Boil Leather Audio Moment subscribers, you know what I'm talking about. If not, this is an oblique reference you do not get because you're outside the club of the cool kids who know why I'm dunking on Steppenwolf. So, but back to the topic. It is a great action scene. And I really like how he's doing it. You know, there's will I get away? But then he's making preparations for breaking a tractor beam at the same time. And how he breaks it is just great with this, I don't even know how to describe it, flechettes, maybe, that he's firing at a dish thing of this, if I'm big, I'm going to be a Star Destroyer thing. It is just awesome. And then he is dispatching of these TIE fighters in an almost... contemptible fashion, really, firing that turret thing that he has in the rear, not even looking at them. This is not like Han Solo and Luke Skywalker on the escape of the Death Star. This isn't over yet, kid. Don't get cocky. No, he is very cocky, and he knows why. And then he is doing this flyby at the bridge of the Imperials just to, I don't know, it seems taunting almost. And then he's using Darth Maul's lightsaber. I'm not sure what it is, but it was absolutely great. And I, for one, cannot wait to get this little baby on the table for the X-Wing Miniatures game that I'm playing. So there's that. Toys incoming, I would say.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I guess to the extent that Andor is a toyetic property at all, you got to assume that they're going to be making Lego stuff and toys out of Andor, which is just very weird because it really does. I know to the outside observer, it is completely ridiculous to say that this is a Star Wars show for grownups, but it legitimately is a Star Wars show for grownups. Like, I watch it and I have a hard time thinking, like, what does your average child think of Andor? Like, it's hard to imagine. Like, this to me, the best way to describe Andor is it's almost like my first prestige TV series. Like, if you want to introduce your child to the concept of, like, hey, by the way, starting in 1999, television got really good, and here's what that's like, this might be the first show you would show them, because there's nothing over the top in terms of gore or language or sexuality. So it is still, it still kind of has its training wheels on, but thematically and emotionally and tonally, it is very, very sophisticated. And politically, it's very, very sophisticated. I mean, you've read the Tony Gilroy interview, same as I have. And, you know, he says, you know, none of this is necessarily intended to be an allegory for anything going on right now. It's just like, listen, I'm a older white man. And what do? I listen to history podcasts and I read history books, and history tends to repeat itself, and it's applicable. And you can learn things from the Russian Revolution, and you can learn things from the Haitian Revolution. And if they happen to have salience to today, well, what do you know? So point being simply that, like, it's wild to think that there are probably going to be Andor toys if there aren't already, but there almost certainly are. But I wanted to bring up two things about the points you just made. You said that this was an action scene not for the sake of pacing, but for the sake of character. And I thought that was such a great point. You're absolutely right. This is not a show that does, like, okay, we've had talking, talking, talking. Now we need action. Talking, 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 action. Talking, 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 action. This action scene, it's a dogfight in the grand Star Wars tradition. But it is done purely to provide this moment of catharsis after Luthen Rail has had these incredibly frustrating and difficult conversations. First with Saw Gerrera about the fate of their fellow, though not particularly close, rebel comrade Anto Krieger, who Rail knows is about to be intercepted and ambushed by the ISB. And Gerrera is ready to help him, despite his earlier reticence. And Rail has to be like, well, actually, you might not want to do that, because I'm about to sacrifice this guy for the greater good. An incredibly difficult, soul-destroying conversation for this man to have, as we learned from his monologue at the close of the previous episode. Then he has this coded conversation with Kleia, his lieutenant and right-hand woman, who serves as his, like, quote-unquote employee or assistant or whatever she is at the antiques dealership that he uses as this front business. And the whole time they're having this conversation, they cannot say a single honest word. They have to talk about it entirely in the coded language of antiques dealer lingo. And you can only imagine how frustrating it must be to try and address these incredibly important life or death matters by talking about getting outbid for a piece. Like, he has no freedom. He's completely boxed in by this life that he's chosen for himself. And then this Imperial, whatever it is, shows up, And it's staffed, like every Imperial thing that we've seen in this whole show, by this beautifully cast crew of British character actors who are instantly the most contemptible, repugnant people you've ever seen in your whole life. You just want to smack them all in the face. They're so intolerably imperious and awful. Cop mindset, just from top to bottom, cop mindset. And almost effortlessly, he strings them along until his ship is ready to do what it needs to do. He effortlessly punks them out, frags their giant tractor beam satellite dish, destroys half a dozen TIE fighters and gets away, and just leaves them sitting there like, what the fuck just happened to us? That is all done. I mean, it's done. It is done for us, I think, in the audience, because after a whole season of dread and suspicion and subjugation, a moment like this is cathartic for us, but it's cathartic for him. And it demonstrates the kind of emotional appeal of the rebellion, I think, in many ways, because he has no, there's no joy in it for him at all. But you do get the sense that, you know, he might have enjoyed himself in this moment. You know, mostly he was probably concerned with getting away alive and preserving the secrets that he holds as this linchpin for the rebellion. But it is done for his sake. And then the other thing that I would add is that I think it does raise questions about, well, what is this guy's background? Which I had never really given much thought to before. But based on the way he flies the ship and defeats a phalanx of presumably experienced fighter pilots, this guy's a Clone Wars veteran, isn't he? Well, what side was he on? That's interesting, too. It's interesting to me mostly as a prequels guy who really appreciates what Lucas was doing with the prequels and thinks... I really do think, you know, the deeper I get into Andor, the smarter the prequels feel to me, because as goofy as some of the elements of the prequels are and as problematic as some of the elements of the prequels are and all the stuff about, you know, the acting and blah, 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 the core concepts are actually very sophisticated and weirdly so. I mean, everyone made like, what are we talking about trade disputes for and blockades and taxation and Senate motions and stuff. It's like, well, Andor kind of delivers on the promise of the prequels in that way. So I'm fine with kind of making you think about Luthen Rail in the context of, well, where did he learn how to do all this stuff given his age? Like, how would he have become a highly skilled starfighter pilot? Like, well, there's really only one way that anyone did it at that time. And yeah, just a not only a fun sequence, but a really rich sequence, I think.
Totally agreed on all of your comments. I don't know how much I have to add to that. And it is just a really great scene that we get here. And as you said, the first really Star Wars-y action scene. And I do not expect any more to come in this season, at least, if ever, basically. This is just out of the ordinary. And I think the show communicated this well enough. This is not going to be standard. Because if you look at all the other scenes in this episode, it is just different. So let's have a look at the other lighter scene that we get, which is the final escape from the prison planet, where they are trying to steal the quad jumper. And it is just also great because it merges humor with, once again, actual world building and storytelling. You have Melchi who makes this wild dash to the quad jumper that a much more cautious Endor does not really condone, but once it started, he has no other choice but to go on with it. And then you have these two guys who are much too wise to get their comeuppance like this, and to simply catch them in their nets, and then go into this weird dialogue about killing them and selling them to the Empire, which is just to frighten them. And then they show what has been obvious all the time, but which is now spelled out, I think, for the first time, aside from Ferrix, which is that the Empire sucks and that they piss off a lot of people. And these two guys have the opportunity to earn 2,000 credits, however much that is. But when we take Mon Mothma at her word, that 400,000 is a really great sum, then 1,000 is nothing to be sneezed at. And they just forego it because they hate the Empire's guts. And not only that, they are then flying them to wherever they want to go, basically. They're even playing taxi for these escaped convicts, because the rule holds that whoever is on the wrong side of the Empire is on the right side for the people, basically. And we have enough rebels to see that this is not always the case, looking at you, Saul Guerrera, and your band. But in this situation, it's just so beautiful. And it is one of the many stepping stones that we get towards Cassian Andor's quest, journey, in joining the rebellion. Because he can see here the effects that it has. And when, after they made their escape, when Melchi says to him, the people must know, basically, and he hammers it home to him, that the people must learn about this, the power of knowledge, of propaganda. It has such a negative tone, but this is what the rebels need to do. And I think it really gets to Andor. In the first moment that Melchi says it, I thought, I can read on Diego Luna's face that he is not on board with it. But when Melchi repeats it, and when Andor then gives him the blaster and everything, I think he got to him in a way. So we are on the cusp of Cassian Andor really becoming a fighter for the rebellion. I think what we the final straw that we need is his encounter with Well, or re-encounter, and or Cinta. I don't know which of the two will get to him first, but one of them will. I'm pretty certain that's where all of this seems to be headed. We are going back to Ferrix, because the first three episodes were important after all, I would assume.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. And yeah, so that is also greatly done. And just as a geeky aside, I fucking hate the quad jumper. Every time it comes on the table, I do not like this thing. I was defeated by it way too often. So yeah, it was nice to see it in a live-action Star Wars show. And as you wrote in your review, it absolutely fits in the episode. But I hate that fucking ship, just for gaming reasons.
Oh, wait, so wait a minute. This is a pre-existing ship? What from?
I think the Extended Universe.
Oh, okay. All right. I was wondering why I had... You're making me feel bad for a second as a Star Wars nerd. Although I haven't seen any of the cartoons, so if it's stuff from the cartoons, that's beyond that goes beyond my remit as a Star Wars
nerd. Yeah, I have no clue, because I haven't seen the cartoons either. But since you have now something clever to say, I could look it up on Wikipedia if you're that interested.
Sure, I'll give a little spiel, and you can look it up on Wikipedia while I'm talking. How's that sound? Or Wikipedia, excuse me.
Wikipedia, yeah, oh, sure. So you do, and I'll check where the quad jumper comes from.
I think you're right. I think that final scene between Ruscott Melchi talking to him about how, like, people need to know what happened to us in that prison. People need to know what's going on in prison. Which is the message I read on my Twitter every day, which is, from activists, which is, there's some confluence. Anyway, between him saying that and Cassian processing the news of his mother's death, his adopted mother's death, I guess I should make a point of saying, you can see in the actor Diego Luna's face, you can watch this news wash over him and change him almost in real time. You watch his sort of, he usually has this very flat affect, and not flat affect, that's not quite the right word I'm looking for. He can have a sort of impassive look on his face. He usually does, because he's reserved, because he's used to holding himself within himself, because he's been scrambling for survival since he was a child. He receives this news, and you just watch his face shift, and the muscles in his face tense, and his eyes sort of widen and become sort of lambent and teary. And he doesn't say anything during this. It's just, a long lingering close-up, which I think is, that's my kind of thing. Certainly. I mean, I love that in film. I love that in television. I love any time the filmmakers have the patience to let the camera, let the actor tell the story. Not through dialogue, but just through body language and facial expressions. That's the kind of thing I really, really like. And so for Melshi to be saying this at the same time as he's receiving this news, I feel like you're watching that consciousness be born in Andor, just live right there in front of you. It is a really affecting scene, one of the most affecting scenes in the show so far, I think. And it raises a lot of questions about what will happen in the final episode, and what will he do, and why. And I mean, we know what becomes of him in the end, because this obviously is a prequel series. But how he gets there has been very interesting. And I feel like we're taking the final steps toward that bring us from Cassian Andor, the thief, and the to Cassian Andor, the outlaw, to Cassian Andor, the revolutionary. And I find it a very, very fascinating journey to go on.
And what better way to follow up these insightful statements by useless trivia? I just realized that I'm dumb, because of course I know where the quad jumper comes from. It's from The Force Awakens, so you should know it as well. It's the ship that Finn and Rey try to reach before it's blown up, and then they go to the Millennium Falcon. So we do not actually see it flying or anything. It's just standing around the Nima outpost, and it gets exploded as part of a gag. And then they go to this pile of junk. That's where the quad jumper comes from. So I don't know how much sense it makes that it even stands around in this old and battered up shape in a series set like 40 years prior, but I don't really care, to be honest, and it just fits better here than on Nima Outpost, I have to say. Oh yeah, well, I guess it fits in both. But then, I just posed a rhetorical question, which is, what better way to follow up insightful statements than with stupid trivia? And I have a better way to follow this up, because we have news. News that do not pertain to Andor, but they do pertain to this very podcast. And I have to give it over to you, Sean, because this is your great moment, just for logistical reasons, really, but it is your moment, and I'm giving you the stage to make one of the biggest announcements in Boiled Leather Audio history. And you people are with us in this very moment. Now, over to Sean.
All right, well, we've been talking a lot through this whole series on Andor about how the Rebellion is generating support. It's a big part of the whole of the story so far, is how did the Rebellion begin? Who was commanding it? Where was the money coming from? You know, what supported the Rebellion that wound up overthrowing the Empire, right? What is supporting the Boiled Leather Audio Hour? Well, I'll tell you. Support for the Boiled Leather Audio Hour is brought to you by Manscaped! the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. That's right, folks. Manscaped, a sponsor of the Boiled Leather Audio Hour. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your, gentlemen, or whoever, family jewels. Manscaped Performance Package, baby. It's the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 7 million men, 14 million family jewels individually, worldwide, who trust Manscaped. With this exclusive offer for you, our listeners, who stuck with us through... Stefan, how long have we been doing this podcast now?
Over 10 years.
Over 10 years! Listening to the Boiled Leather Audio Hour, even if you've just been listening for 2 weeks, that's fine too. You get 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code, Boiled Leather at manscaped.com. Now, I don't know what you've personally been through in your personal grooming journey, your men's hygiene journey, but I can say that finding some way to, you know, keep things under control. Let's say you're the ISB of your own package area, right? And you're trying to maintain control. Well, that can be difficult to do with the normal tools available out there to you. You know, you don't want to take the thing that you trim your beard with and go to town on your area. That's a bad idea. That's just going to cause trouble. That's how rebellion starts, folks. A rebellion of the pubes. You don't want that. You don't want that at all. But the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped has arrived, and it is a game changer. Inside this package, you will find Manscaped's Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver ball deodorant. Now, there's a phrase I bet you never thought you'd hear on the Boiled Leather Audio Hour. The Crop Reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold the whole shebang. Now, first of all, the Lawnmower 4.0. This trimmer is the future of grooming. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's the greatest ball trimmer ever. And I speak, you know, I can speak from experience. I don't want to get into a whole thing. But it's a fourth generation trimmer. It's their fourth generation trimmer, excuse me. It features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. It does make a difference. That much I can tell you for sure. The Lawnmower 4.0, it's waterproof and has a 4000K LED spotlight you need for a more precise shave. And let me tell you something. That LED spotlight, you would not believe the difference it makes. Once you use that thing, you're going to be like, why doesn't literally everything that I use in every aspect of my entire life come with a little LED flashlight on the end to help me see what the hell I'm doing? It would make life so much easier. Well, the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0 has it. And because it's waterproof, you can say goodbye to a mess on the bathroom floor or whatever it is you're trimming your business. You can just step right into the shower with that sucker. You can go to town, wash the mess away. It's beautiful. If you thought that was good, are you ready to take things to the next level? Because the Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer. That is also waterproof. That also provides proprietary skin-safe technology. It helps reduce nicks and snags and tugs. And if you've ever, like, tried to... Listen, I'll be honest with you. I'm a hairy kind of guy. You got to trim your nose hair sometime. You got to trim your ear hair sometime. And if you're... It's annoying if you're using something that's just, like... It's not up to snuff. You're, like, yanking and pulling on the hairs, and it just sucks. It does not suck with the Weed Whacker. It really, truly does not. Again, speaking from experience here. Meanwhile, you get the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant. Just a little dab will do you. Everything will just be delightful down there. You get the Crop Reviver Ball Toner, which is just a couple of spritzes, and it's like you're a new man. It's unbelievable. It will change the way you approach your hygiene routine downstairs. Dare I say it, because it is the trademark line, your balls will thank you. Manscaped even throws in a couple of free gifts when you get the Performance Package 4.0. You get Manscaped boxers, which are very swanky, and you get the Shed travel bag, so you can take all the stuff that they send you, which is a ton of stuff, and you stick it in this travel bag, and boom, it's taken care of. You know, it just, you can zip through freaking the TSA checkpoints, or you just stick it in your suitcase. You're good to go. Folks, Boiled Leather audio listeners, wildlings, Dornishmen, residents of Ferrix, I don't care what you are. It's time to take care of yourself. So go to manscaped.com and you get 20% off plus free shipping with the code Boiled Leather. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. You use the code Boiled Leather. Unlock your confidence. Use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. And I'll throw in, you'll be doing us a little favor. Go there. Use the code. Show them that you listen to us. Show them that you value our point of view on these things. Show them that, listen, if the Boiled Leather audio guys, if the illustrious co-hosts say Manscaped is for us, guess what? Manscaped is for us. Manscaped.com, code Boiled Leather.
Thank you so much. And if you are now sitting at wherever you are listening to the Boiled Leather audio hour in kind of a bewildered state of mind, we are going on a journey here, and we are not planning on just reading ads to you, because Manscaped was really firm on this point. They actually send us this stuff, and we need to test it before we read it to you. That's why Sean read it to you, and that's what I meant with logistical reasons. I'm living in Germany, so the package takes a little bit longer to get to me. So I do not know yet what he's talking about, but I can't wait to find out. We are recording this on the 17th, and FedEx promised me I will get my package on the 21st, so that's 4 days from now, and then I can, for the first time in my life, try to trim hair and places I never trimmed it before. And next time, I will be able to tell you just how great or not great it actually is. And we will take you on this journey, and we promise you it will be worth your while, even if you do not put in the code Boiled Leather at manscaped.com, which please do. Just get it. It's 20% off, worldwide free shipping. What else do you want, really? So until the next time when we read this, we are signing off for the ad for now. And we are really hoping that this will be a success, because if you support Manscaped, Manscaped supports us. It's this weird capitalism thing going on. But now,
boom.
Let's get back to the guy who wants to burn it all down. which is Andor. And you just talked about how devastated he is by the death of his mother. And not only he was devastated, I can tell you, these scenes tug at my heartstrings. You were talking about, you know, Star Wars making you weep last time. And yeah, I was really close to it when they escaped that prison and they had to leave Andy Serkis behind. But this time, holy crap, my eyes felt just a little wet, and for some reason the image blurred for a moment. I'm sure it was a problem with my projector, but holy crap, that scene, the whole combination of scenes with that fucking droid who is like a little child, either deciding to or genuinely not understanding the concept of death of his mother. That was... I'm just quoting you, Sean, in a fucking Star Wars show. A Star Wars show is taking death seriously. It is showing us grief, and not just in a way that the main character looks sad for 10 seconds and then goes on training the Force. This is a whole community grieving for a person before it is devastating another person half a galaxy away. You can feel the ripple effects. And then we get explained the burial rituals in the crassest way possible, which is a briefing in a video conference call by the space Stasi. It's all so wild. And added to that mix, you get Biggs, who is forced under the threat of torture while suffering PTSD from her previous torture sessions, which were about the death of children that the Empire genocided, just in case you forgot that little nugget. It is combining to such a strong emotional force that is at the same time bearing down on you, draining you completely, and making you understand on such a deep level what it is that these people are actually rebelling against, you know, why the Empire must fall. And if you can watch these scenes and still get this effect of, oh my god, Empire uniforms really look cool and aren't stormtroopers just the sexiest fascist stormtroopers alive when they are marching through Disneyland. it is just wild, man, what we are treated here in this Star Wars show on Disney Plus. I'm running out of words, but my feelings are intense right now.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to think how to put it, but to make you feel so deeply for a character that you don't really know, it's just good. All right, let me put it this way. Tony Gilroy made Michael Clayton, and I'm not going to get into spoilers for that film, but you should watch it if you haven't. It's tremendously entertaining, but not stupid. It's entertaining and smart, which is an achievement. And that film is very good at making you feel like legitimate grief for people that you had not met 45 minutes earlier. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a movie, and that's how movies work. And that's the beauty of film as opposed to television. Now, I know that I'm a television critic, and I love what long-form storytelling in the form of television drama can do in terms of showing us how characters grow and change over time. That, to me, is the great advantage that television has over cinema, over film, excuse me, or movies, whatever, film, movie, cinema, what difference does it make? It doesn't make a difference. But Gilroy is very good at just taking characters and sketching them out in such a way that you become attached to them in a very short time and then yanking them away from you and making that hurt. And that's what he does here. And, you know, and he does it all, again, like I said, off screen. Marva doesn't get a big death scene. And Marva, you've barely met. You are responding to other people's response to her death. And, you know, it's very effective and it's very affecting. And I don't really have a whole lot much else to say about it other than that I'm impressed by the skill with which the story is being told to make you feel something about a character you've spent maybe 15 minutes total of screen time with over the course of 11 episodes. It's pretty impressive.
I have one question for you. In your review, you mentioned the possibility that the death might actually be a fake out. Do you really believe this, or is this more or less future proofing and covering your bases?
Oh, that was future proofing 100%. Like, I didn't have that in there when I initially submitted the review, and then I was like, you know what? I'm going to cover my bases just in case. And I feel a little bad about that. It does feel a little cowardly. It does feel a little bit like I'm hedging my bets, but I'm so used to basically every important death in every show that I've ever seen, with one notable exception, which is Boardwalk Empire, season 5. Every actually important death of a character that we've already met in every show that I've ever seen happens on screen, or at least in such a way that you see the face of the corpse before the body bag is zipped up, and you don't see that here. So I did feel like, you know what, part of the, I'll put it this way, a large part of it was hedging my bets, a large part of it was future proofing, but also part of it was like, you know, in a way, it does feel a little bit irresponsible for me as a critic to assert that this is 100% Marva's death. And I might not have felt that way if the previously on Andor stuff hadn't leaned so heavily on the you know, the departure of Andor from Marva and Marva staying behind. you know, I don't know. Who knows? It doesn't seem like the kind of show that would do a fake out death. But like I said in the review, if I ever trusted any show to do a fake out death, it would be this one specifically, because it has never let me down before. And it's hard for me to anticipate it letting me down in the future.
Yeah, same here. When I read that, that just felt true. You know, if they are doing it, it will be great. I have total confidence. Whatever direction they are taking this show, it will work. It will be good. It will be really great. I have even more confidence in this than in Interview with a Vampire, you know, which is another show we will be talking about in the future. But there were moments there when I was much more doubtful than I am right now. It's right or wrong. It's my Andor, basically here. And I really have this full confidence in them. So I think this is the point where we can go into a little bit more random observations on side plots for this episode. We have two big ones, I guess, two big side plots, which is Cyril, on the one hand, who gets the call from his former sergeant, which is really great, much unintentional comedy there. And then we have, of course, Mon Mothma. And we also get this little scene between Val and Luthen's... I don't know what her name is. Maybe you can tell me, Luthen's right-hand girl. So which of these do you want to talk first?
What were the choices again?
Luthen's right-hand gal and Val talking in the shop where she gives the information. We have Mon Mothma and the ceremony. And we do have Cyril Karn getting a call from an old acquaintance.
Oh, gosh. Boy, there's a lot to say. I mean, I'm going to go with Mon Mothma first because I think that what she's living through is effectively every... Pinko parents' nightmare, that you're going to raise children who are more conservative than you are. A very frightening prospect from where I'm sitting, and an unlikely one, I think, with my children, based on their personalities, where they're at currently. But you know, man. It's interesting because what that scene presents us with is that Mon Mothma's child can be a reactionary without being a servant of the Empire. Because this is a cultural schism that has nothing to do with the Emperor and nothing to do with the Empire. It's purely Chandralin cultural and religious practices, past which Mon Mothma has evolved, and Vel has evolved, and past which Mon Mothma believed her family had evolved. But in the Chandrilan diaspora, or diaspora, I don't know how to pronounce that word, and I'm so embarrassed, I'm very, very sorry. But, you know, the children of Chandrilan immigrants to Coruscant are more devoted to the old ways than their parents are. And that's a real tendency that exists, and that's frightening. So I found that scene very chilling. And on the flip side, you have the scene with Cyril and Moss, who calls in from the backwater that he's been assigned to and is trying to tell Cyril that Andor's mother has died, and that, you know, since Cyril was looking for any information on Andor he could get his hands on, and Moss knew it. But, you know, the transmission's breaking up, so there's just this sort of light comedy about, like, you know, that they can't really understand each other or be heard by one another. And it's just light and funny. And I if you take those two scenes in tandem, you see the range of this show and the range of this episode, where you're already dealing with all the stuff, the big moments for Luthen and that incredible close-up of Andor. But meanwhile, you've got this comedy stuff with Cyril, and you've got this real kind of frightening realization by Mon Mothma that she's raising an orthodox little creature, which sucks, and is something that she had hoped to avoid at all costs. But no matter how far away she travels from the world that married her off as a child and made her a senator at 16, teenage kids are going to do what they want in large part. And you can create a sort of traumatic, crippling battle between yourself and the child out of what you feel is the child's better interests, or you can let the child do what they want, recognizing that what they want may be the opposite of what you want and may be far less progressive than your own politics and your own religious beliefs. And that's the dilemma that Mon Mothma finds herself in. And I think, again, it's an incredibly sophisticated, nuanced, and adult character dynamic, which is basically what this show traffics in.
This was just the other scene that really got me to tear up, basically. I should stop saying basically, I'm so sorry. When Mon Mothma is sitting there with Well, like physically trying to force herself not to break down entirely. You can only see it in the tightness of her face and in the starting of the swelling of tears in her eyes, suppressed by sheer force of will. And I was so feeling her. You know, these mixed feelings she has about her child, because she still loves her daughter, obviously, but she's losing her and she knows it. And she's losing her to everything she does not believe in. And this goes way beyond the usual teenage rebellion, because Lida is growing up to be something that is the total antithesis to what her mother is, to what her whole life was dedicated to, and to what, even though almost no one knows it, she has now devoted her total existence and the well-being of this family for. A rebellion that fights for values her daughter doesn't share. And as you said, this has nothing to do with the empire. This is about the underlying values specifically, the freedom and all of that. And this makes it so heartbreaking what's going on. And you can see it in the abject terror that Val feels when she realizes what's going on. And Val has this advantage of being, I would conservatively guess, like being 10 years younger than Mon Mothma. She is the cool aunt and she's trying to perform that role. And this is the final thing about this scene, like when Lida comes out from the ceremony, how both women are snapping back into this performance in the whole phoniness and fakeness of their lives. And you see one of the big reasons why her daughter is trending toward this reactionary stuff, because it's genuine. What she feels during that ceremony, she does not get in her family with this not caring father figure, with the absent mother, and all of that. She's getting all this in the church group that she's in. And all of these dynamics are just so real, so raw, so natural. They feel just right. And every time Andor does something like that, you're going, yeah, of course. You know, like, it is just how people work. And Star Wars usually doesn't do this. Most series usually don't do this. To have real and realistic character developments. And I just love to see this portrayed by great actors. It is so, so good. Yeah, I think that's the most, that's all I can say about this, because it's just such a small scene, but it's very affecting. The whole plot line is so affecting me.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right to single out Genevieve O'Reilly as an actor in this particular scene, because she never actually tells Vel what deal she has made. It doesn't come to that. It's all implicit in her tone of voice, her affect, her facial expression. She never tells her sister the arrangements that she's made. It's all done through implication and inference, and she can't bring herself to say it. She's ashamed of herself. to take and again, I have to keep coming back to this, to take the sort of angelic figure that we first meet in the back half of Return of the Jedi, when she presides over the final conference before the raid on Endor and the attack on the second Death Star, and to make her this rich, complex human being with human concerns and human emotions and human complexities is one of the most remarkable works of alchemy that this franchise has ever pulled off. And I adore it. I really do.
Utterly, utterly. And then we have just the total opposite side of the ledger, as you said it, the comedy between Cyril Karn and the sergeant guy, sorry, I forgot his name, and then the incredibly dry comment from his mother about, and now she can see the reason for his former triumphs. I just cracked up at that. It was just pitch perfect. This dynamic is so toxic and so funny at the same time. I can't get enough of it. I want a sitcom of this, and I would watch it. And I'm not a sitcom guy. So there's that. And now the last thing is Luthen's right-hand gal and Val talking about, let's say, the dynamics of spycraft, more or less, in the antiquity shop. I don't have a lot to say about this, but it is an important scene because it once again shows the cost that this business of rebelling and spying has on people. You do not trust anyone, which is, by the way, mirrored in the Saul Guerrera scene, where we get this whole paranoia stuff in a lot more logical and believable way than we get it in Rogue One, where it just seems over the top and coming out of nowhere. Here we get why. I would be paranoid as Saul Guerrera too, if I would see Luthen operating. And the same is true for Well and his right-hand gal. They both know how he's operating and how this whole business works. And now we do too as the audience. And I think this scene is important to just reinforce this thematic undercurrent that the whole series has.
Yeah, I guess I'm not 100%, I'm not 100% on it. Because he's the most hardcore of the hardcore. So does that mean he's going to fight no matter what? Or does that mean he's going to be like, fuck this guy, the bigger picture is more important? It could go either way.
That is true in terms of character. But I really read this scene like he definitely decided to let him die.
That's fair.
I may be wrong. But this is how I read it, and this seemed to me to be what the scene communicated. This is just a point that I forgot to make earlier, by the way, now that you mention that this could go either way. Another testament to the show's strength is that when Luthen was caught in the tractor beam, it was absolutely conceivable that the Empire would just get him. A random patrol, and that he would just blow himself up in order to avoid falling into their hands. This would have been not out of the ordinary, and I was really fearing that this would happen. I did not expect that Star Wars scene we talked about earlier, before the greatest ad break of all time, to cut in. And it definitely could have gone both ways, and it did go in one. But the same is true, as you say it, with Saul Guerrera. And this uncertainty that I feel about developments does not come from an arbitrariness, as is so often the case in shows like that. When people say that, oh, anything can happen. Yeah, but if anything can happen, then nothing has any importance. But in this case, there are conceivable ways, because we are dealing with complex characters who can make different decisions. And because circumstance is interfering in ways that are realistic. In war, stuff happens that you cannot plan for. And the best laid plans of mice and men are just going awry all the time. And I do fully expect Luthen to die in an encounter like this. Utterly unimportant, totally random, and absolutely avoidable in theory. Just random chance, more or less.
Well put, man. I don't have anything to add to that.
Well, I do. Please support us on Patreon, and please consider going over to manscaped.com and put in the code boiled leather for 20% off, yada, yada, yada. You will get a mouthful of this over the next weeks, but on the other hand, you will also get an earful of content, because we have stuff in store for you guys. Don't you worry. November will be a very boiled month, and December as well. So stay tuned, everyone, and we will grace you. Until next time, thank you for your support, and bye-bye.
Bye.
If you like this podcast, you can support us via PayPal at paypal.me/boiledleather, or you go over to our Patreon at patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour. Patreon offers many subscription tiers, which give you early access to episodes, the possibility to weigh in on topic choices, bonus podcasts like the Boiled Leather Audio Moment or the Boiled Leather Audio Conversation, and of course, the possibility to be mentioned right in the beginning of every podcast. Hop over to patreon.com/boiledleatheraudiohour or contribute over PayPal at paypal.me/boiledleather.